And you are listening to the
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
Moncrief Show on News Talk, 1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Mary says this is in connection to some of the stories that Jonathan was telling us about during our last slot. Mary says, listen to the news from around the world in relation to Hitler's birthplace. Turn it into a synagogue. He'd be doing cartwheels in his grave. That's an interesting idea, though. Whether the Jewish community would particularly appreciate that, I don't know. We also were talking about Viktor Orban, who's launched this quite extraordinary set of new measures to encourage people to have babies, or to encourage Hungarian women to have babies. Someone points out that Mussolini launched a battle for births along broadly similar nationalist lines. Indeed, well, it's still the case in Italy that they've got a very low birth rate, and they are trying to encourage, they are trying to get that up. There's a declining birth rate in general around Europe. Could the Hungarian leader be thinking that he will be needing more workers, or perhaps soldiers? I don't know if it's soldiers, but it's probably economically. And most countries in Europe know that they need immigration to a certain degree, because there's categories of jobs that the native population don't tend to take up, so you know they need it from that point of view. So I suppose he's trying to offset that by saying, no, we don't need immigrants; we can produce all our own babies. But indeed, it would be something he'd probably be trying to encourage other European countries to adopt as well, because apparently he fancies himself as a future leader of Europe. We were talking as well about women priests, which Josefa Madigan had some comments to make about that yesterday. Anthony says, did a lady in your report say institutional abuse by the church wouldn't have happened if women were in charge? As far as I know, nuns ran and staffed all the mother and baby homes and laundries. Another texter says, I feel so disillusioned with the Catholic Church as a whole that I couldn't care less if a woman is pontificating from the altar or not. I wouldn't be more or less inclined to go to Mass if they allowed women priests. Anthony says, extensive research has been done, and since the Church of England ordained women priests, attendance and people identifying as members of the Church of England has continued to decline year after year. So ordaining women is clearly more of a feminist issue rather than anything to do with salvation of the actual church. Says Anthony. No, you're right. You probably wouldn't need to do extensive research to see that numbers are declining. That's probably to do with a whole range of other issues. But I would imagine if you do regard yourself as a Catholic you still have some fealty to the church, that and particularly if you're a woman, you might feel that it's perhaps time for the church to reflect more women in its hierarchy, and perhaps the occasional woman up on the altar. On the subject of washing hands, Texas says there was a nightclub in Cork and they used to frequent back in the day, where the toilet comprised 8 urinals and 1 sink. There was always a queue for the urinal, never one for the sink. Yeah. We were also talking as well earlier on to a young man whose mother who was an anti-vaccination person, and she decided not to get him vaccinated. But when he turned 18, Ethan decided he would get himself vaccinated. Texter says that's an interesting form of rebelliousness. John says there's an outbreak of mumps in a school right now. It's in the news, so it's not a secret. A result of the anti-vaccine camp, I'd say, says John. Another texter says there are a load of mothers in my breastfeeding group who are saying they aren't going to risk it by vaccinating their baby. Risk it? They're risking the health of my child and any other children that they come into contact with. It's just so irresponsible. Though L says it was a very one-sided interview. I did not vaccinate my children, as I informed myself of both arguments, for and against. I read a lot of books on the subject and decided I was not convinced of their safety or efficacy. The fact that vaccinated children get the diseases they are vaccinated against kind of questions the efficacy. Also, 1 in 6 children are now autistic. autistic or other spectrum. It used to be 1 in 300. Vaccination can tip some children over that toxic load in their health. It is not that vaccines cause autism per se. I've told my sons, who are adults now, that they are welcome to get vaccinated if they look at all the research as I did. It is their decision. Well, with the greatest of respect, you didn't look at all the research. Yeah, Ethan, in the course of that interview, mentioned the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in the US, which is the largest health body in the United States. 1 in 6 children are not autistic. 1 in 59 children are autistic. So God knows where you got that particular figure from. And even a basic understanding of vaccinations will tell you that if you have 100 kids and they're all vaccinated against a particular disease and that disease breaks out among them, a percentage of them might get that disease, say 10%, and I'm just plucking that figure out of the air, would get that disease. But if you have 100 kids and none of them are vaccinated, 100 of them will get that disease. And that's basic common sense, I would have thought. Plus, on top of that, L, you know, with the greatest of respect, if you're a doctor and you have a lump, if you have a lump in your breast and you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, that might be serious, you're going to say, no, I'm going to read the arguments for and against lumps in my breast to see whether actually I might have a tumour there or not. It's not a matter of opinion now. People have been vaccinated for decades. It's established scientific fact. And in, if you say it's a one-sided interview, I'm not, for the sake of balance, going to argue that the sky is actually green instead of blue, or that, you know, climate change doesn't exist, or the world is being run by some secret Jewish cabal. I'm sorry. I want to live in this sector of the universe. Time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is, why are Canadians so different to Americans? Graham, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And I should point out that Graham is Canadian, so yeah, this is going to be a very one-sided interview.
It's true. Well, I'm American identified. So, but sadly, America doesn't identify back. I also occasionally play an American on the radio, because I'm a fraud, everybody. Sorry. It's a very Canadian thing there. I just gave myself away. Yeah. I already apologized.
Already
the first 5 seconds.
Yes.
But no, I mean, and you may think this is something I came up with and it's all about me. But in fact, this is an actual questioner from a listener.
Yes, indeed.
Right, who may well be a friend of mine. But
yeah,
in any case, somebody actually wanted to know. And actually, with also austerity, many, many people in Ireland will have been to both the United States and Canada, often for extended periods of time. So, I mean, during the sort of crash, pretty much every day or every other day, someone would tell me spontaneously about their relative in Canada, going to Canada, living in Canada, and so forth. And so it's something which people are increasingly noticing. I think that's probably it.
Yes, indeed. But would it be the case that you have one set of attitudes and those set of attitudes disappear as soon as you cross over the northern border of the US, and it's a completely different set of attitudes?
This is a really interesting question. Now, this is a relatively old poll. It's actually quite an old poll. It's from 2003. A fair number of things have happened since then. But it has a really remarkable result. And this is from Pew, the poll company. And they did a big poll of people on both sides of the northern border. And they came up, there are really, really interesting ways in which Canadians and Americans differ. And a lot of the more recent polls bring this out. So Canadians are more likely to believe in the reality of climate change. They're more willing to say that it's something they'd pay money to avoid. Happily, our government rarely asks us to do that. Canadians are a terrible bunch of climate criminals. And they may say this knowing that they're really not going to be asked to turn the heat down in their overheated houses. But in any case, no, go to Canada. I mean, the houses are very warm in the winter. They're also much more open on religious subjects. Far fewer Canadians believe that you have to believe in God to be a moral person. Far fewer Canadians believe that the husband should take care of the family. Far fewer Canadians are opposed to any form of homosexuality. And in fact, marriage equality was brought in Canada, and its approval for it is gaining. So there are these differences. What's really striking is the people just over the border in the northern states of the United States. Now, we've got to make distinctions here because, you know, North Dakota, Wyoming, and so forth are more conservative than Massachusetts. And California is much more liberal, famously than Mississippi. But people on the border states tend to have almost exactly the same attitudes as Canadians on these social issues.
But is that all the way across the border or tending towards the coast?
It probably varies from place to place, but no, along the border. I mean, this is 2003, 2004, so maybe things have changed a little bit. North Dakota has become very conservative in the intervening years. They've lost their Democratic senators. But there's a great, much bigger distinction between northern voters and southern voters in the southeastern United States, in the old southern states. And there are also a lot of differences in people's practices. Canadians drink a lot more than Americans. Mm. There's far more teetotalers in the United States than in Canada. And that's something you can tell if you were in Canada. Cold countries along the top of the world.
They do.
I'm not excusing anything in any country, but they do tend to drink a little bit more. What's interesting, I mean, part of this is sort of multiculturalism. If there is a non-drinking population of Canada, it's much more likely not. I mean, we have a relatively small population of evangelicals, but it's going to be our very significant religious minorities. And in fact, they often have visible minorities or religious minorities have more conservative social views than average, you know, the normal non-minority Canadians. Mm. Right. The other thing about Canada, of course, is everybody's a minority because it's the most multicultural country on earth. Toronto is the most multicultural city on earth. That's where I grew up. But it was really quite striking that Canadians and Americans share a lot of attitudes. They're broadly satisfied with their lives. They believe that they have control over their fate. But again, the real distinction is between these northern states and then southern states. And that tells you a little bit about some of the origins of the difference between Canada and the United States in terms of its politics and its attitudes towards the role of the state. We've been often accused of not having a culture, and donuts and hockey aren't apparently enough. The things people in Canada are most proud of are actually of quite recent invention. So people would associate them, you know, Canada with pride with free universal health care.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing is true of Britain, you know, for as long as they have it. Mm. And they had it first, to be fair. Right. And multiculturalism. Canadians have a patriotic attitude towards multiculturalism. So a number of people have traced the difference to different attitudes about people being diverse and getting along. Canadians are much more likely to marry outside of their ethnic group. Growing up in Toronto, all my friends were ex-something Canadians, right? I would be Irish, Scottish Canadian, I guess, because we had to all blend in, right? And almost all of us had grandparents, none of whom were born in Canada, and many of had parents who weren't born in Canada. And these were people from Malta and Italy and India and Pakistan and everything, right?
Mm. And well, I mean, on that point, Americans tend to, if you meet an American, you find out fairly quickly that they're Irish American or African American or whatever American, they're still clinging on to their ethnic group quite strongly. That tends to be far less the case with Canadians. They're just Canadians.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's one of those weird ironies in that. So a lot of people have said, look, Donald Trump couldn't happen as easily in Canada, because Canada is not a xenophobic nation. Something we share. There's plenty of racists in Canada.
Sure.
In fact, quite disturbingly, a number of the world's most prominent racists who have online successful lives fomenting lies are from Canada.
Yeah.
And or from Ireland, who've then moved to Canada.
That's correct. That guy from Athlone. What's
that guy, his name? Yeah. Guy who shall not be named.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the oxygen, frankly.
Yeah.
Are from Canada. So it's not like these attitudes aren't out there. And actually the treatment of Native Canadians is appalling. And Native Canadians occupy a particular role in Canada. There are quite significant populations in some of the Western provinces. I spend most of my time when I'm in Canada in Manitoba. You can look it up on the map. There's a very significant Native Canadian population, and they're going through a lot of the things which I think African Americans went through in the 20th century in terms of moving to big cities where they are marginalized in many, many ways. Their economic opportunities are low, and it's a combination of a sort of cultural clash and structural factors which are making their lives very difficult. And there's plenty of discrimination against them. But by and large, and there's plenty of actual, any kind of racism you want to find in Canada, but there are different, it takes a different form, again, because of multiculturalism. Canada has had a lot of interesting historical factors which have been pointed to as a cause for these political differences. I suppose I should start by going way back. My favorite theory maybe is by Donald Worster, who's an economic historian, an environmental historian, sorry, who blames glaciation. Which left all the usable topsoil of Canada, or for large parts of Canada, down in the southern states of the United States and maybe up into the Midwest. Because if you go to where my family has a cottage, which is the most Canadian thing there is, you're actually deprived if you don't have a cottage on a lake, is in the Canadian Shield, which has these bare rocks with just tiny little bits of earth, which keeps a few pine trees going and bears and things like that. They don't eat the pine trees. But so Canada historically wasn't really, especially with the winters as well, suitable for plantation-style agriculture. And of course, chattel slavery is what drives the particular politics of the southern United States, which is a whole topic in its own right, and gave the United States its peculiar political institutions, which focused on giving increased power to rural communities. Large vetoes in this dysfunctional Republican system, which is different from a Canadian parliamentary system, to individual states who sure as hell wanted to use it to protect institutions like slavery, to have decisions which allowed them to count their slaves, but not have three-fifths of them anyway, or two-thirds of them. Three-fifths, sorry. Sorry, Americans. But not let them vote, and so forth and so on. And, chattel slavery can't be ignored as a difference in the culture, the violence, the lack of public trust, the lack of solidarity we often see among Americans. So that's...
They wouldn't see it as a lack of solidarity, but a great belief in individualism. But the Canadians seem to have a more European-style view of the state, that it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, no, we often are seen as a sort of halfway house between the United States and Europe. A former colleague, as an undergraduate of mine, has done very well as a philosophy professor, and by one of his books calling Canada the efficient society, and basically saying Canada is like a utopia. Now, he's regretted that sort of subtitle. But the idea is that we intervene in the market when we need to, when there are collective action problems which the state needs to work out, but we don't when we don't. And so we intervene, unlike the United States, when we need to, but we don't when we shouldn't, the way bad old socialist Europe does, or something like that. It's interesting. His name's Joseph Heath. You should go check it out. Yeah. He doesn't need my help. But in any case, you know, that political culture argument was made by great political scientists like Seymour Martin Lipset back when people talked about political culture, which is you have this individualist culture versus one which was produced by the Tories, the conservatives who fled the American Revolution and founded Ontario. Right. But already there had been this experiment in giving the Catholic Quebecers, who had been conquered by the British, but without any large populations in Ontario, their own law, the civil law for many aspects, the practice of Catholicism, which sure as hell wasn't going to be tolerated in Ireland in the 18th century to anything like the same degree. And so this whole idea of accommodation of two cultures, of multicultures, founding the country and everyone getting along, seems to be important. Finally, there's the argument that it's a different legal culture, and this is by a guy called Jason Kaufman, which is that the American colonies, all 13 colonies, including Massachusetts, were sort of largely corporate colonies, which were set up by people with the approval of the crown, but they were really like corporations. They were entrepreneurial sort of colonies. And so they never had the relationship of the crown colonies in places like Nova Scotia to the metropole, to the empire, which had a much more direct link, a much more direct chain of command, and where laws were much clearer. And so the way that land was divided up wasn't just rushing out into Ohio, as we saw in the eminent historical documentary Far and Away, to grab land, but in fact it was divided up in a way which everybody could live with. And so as these two systems, both of which more or less functioned, right, they gain allegiance. And so the final part of the story is Canadian healthcare. And it was one of the great founding moments of Canadian history, and which led Seymour Martin Lipset to try and figure out how did a socialist government appear in 1955 in Saskatchewan and bring in eventually universal medical care. And there was a doctor's strike, but once they won, it spread very quickly and has support of all parties very quickly to the rest of Canada, and still has the support of all parties today.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Actually, that's an interesting point. Is why has the U.S. never been alarmed by socialism to the north of it, but always has been alarmed by socialism to the south of
it. Because it's completely non-threatening socialism. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a new Democratic Party, which is actually headed, again, many of our politicians are of ethnic minorities. It's Jagmeet Singh, who's a very stylish Sikh who wears a turban and very stylish with it, may I say. Many of our ministers, many of our politicians in parliament are foreign born. Our first prime minister was foreign born. And so, you know, it's, but the New Democratic Party makes the Labour Party look like trots.
Yeah,
I mean, it's,
yeah.
You know, it's a very non-threatening form of socialism. You know, Americans have to deride it because it works so well that people tend to get jealous. And Michael Moore's made a lot of money off of this. Anyway, the success of that particular institution may be founded on one of the sort of the one theorem in social science is that a redistributive institution like a universal healthcare policy gains allegiance as it goes on. The more people are familiar with it, the more prepared they are to make these kinds of transfers. And it does work very well. I miss it all the time. So for whatever reason, even though if you go and talk to us, we're very hard to distinguish. And I don't get upset when people identify me as an American, but it's the border, the long-standing peaceful border, and it's bloody long too, has made us evolve in separate ways, which we're pretty comfortable with.
And I know it's something of a stereotype and a cliche about Canadians, but it is true. I've been in Toronto and seen two Canadians have an argument over a parking spot and not realize they were having an argument until one of them told me afterwards that that was an argument. Why Canadians are very even-tempered, it seems, and very polite to each other.
I don't know, as someone who almost got beaten up by lumberjacks in like rural Ontario, lumberjack towns, you know, it's not all like that. And I mean, it's true that Canadians like this. These are the other final factor is what are the stories we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Canadians are worried about falling on hard times, but and they're worried about unemployment because the unemployment rate's much higher in Canada than it is in the US. But at the same time, we tell ourselves stories about how we're nice and polite and so forth. Americans tell themselves that as well. They talk about Iowa nice and things like that. Iowa is very much like Canada, only with very, very conservative politicians. But the absence of guns, you know, don't go to Canada thinking you can fight with people over parking spaces and suffer no consequences.
They do have guns.
We have loads of guns, but we don't tend to keep them in our glove compartments.
Yeah.
And so if you're commuting around Toronto, you will see fistfights break out of the side of the road because people know the other guy's not going to shoot them.
Yes.
Right. So they're prepared to escalate. And that's true whether you're a commuter in Toronto or a lumberjack in Kenora, Ontario.
Graham Finley, sorry. We'll take a break after
I'm sorry, Sean.
After that, squirrel for dinner.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.